GNC 584. It's May, June 14th, and you're listening to the Geek News Central podcast, sponsored by GoDaddy.com. Geek News Central is a part of the Tech Podcast Network. We want to get a great show for you, and a beautiful day in Rochester here. But you know what comes next. Strap in. Here it comes.
Coming to you from a dimly lit hotel room with bad Wi-Fi and not enough power outlets, here's everyone's favorite jet-lagged geek, Todd Cochran.
Aloha and welcome to the Geek News Central podcast, coming to you as live as it can be from Rochester, New York via the Geek New Central Portable Studio. Hey everyone, welcome to the show. Again, my name is Todd Cochran. I want to encourage you to get over to geeknewscentral.com. Check out all the great content over there. Of course, check out our archive podcasts available via the podcast link on the website. We want to, of course, give a warm welcome to the Ohana and all the longtime listeners of the show. And of course, those of you that are tuning in from 169 countries worldwide, we want to thank you for being part of the Ohana here. And I want to encourage all of you, of course, to get signed up for the newsletter. The newsletter contains everything I'm going to cover in the show tonight, including articles that have been submitted by audience members like you. If you've got something you want to submit for a later show, you can do that via geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com, or you can call the voicemail hotline at area code 619-342-7365. That's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So you can call in anytime or just drop me an email. We encourage you as well just to subscribe to the show. You can find links to iTunes, to Zune Marketplace, standard RSS feeds. Subscribe and never miss an episode of the show and listen at your leisure. Of course, we want to encourage you to watch us on the Tech Podcast channel on the Roku and Boxy applications. Of course, the Roku is an actual device. You can, if you're looking to watch the show or even get Netflix or any other type of new media, you definitely check out the Roku box at roku.com. And of course, if you've hacked your Apple TV, you can get the Boxy app at boxy.com. Of course, Boxy just announced as well that they are going to be now pushing their actual D-Link integrated device until November, which saddens me a little bit, but they're working to get their implementation correct. But Roku watching of the show continues to grow strong, and we want to welcome all of you that have been watching via that device. Of course, if you're watching us on the web or however you're listening or getting the show, it doesn't matter. The main thing is that you are. Hey, I've got just a little update here for you. What's going on? I got into Rochester Saturday very late in the evening. It was, a flight day full of adventure. I arrived at DFW pretty early to get out of there, and I think about 6 hours after the, well, not 6 hours, maybe 4 hours after the flight was originally supposed to take off, we finally flew out of Dallas, and part of the challenge was the weather in Chicago. This was Saturday when that line of thunderstorms was going through, but finally got into Chicago and missed my initial connecting flight. But United hooked me up and got me on one of the last flights into Rochester. Made it to the rental car counter about 10 minutes to spare with about a line of people that had the same thing on their minds. But I said, don't get luggage first. Get rental car. And it paid off. But I got in here late Saturday night to Rochester. And then Sunday kind of just took it easy. It's been beautiful here, though. For Rochester, saying tomorrow it's going to be clear skies. I'm looking forward to see what it looks like with clear skies. And been able to meet up with some old friends. It's been fun so far here. But one more show here in Rochester. I'll be doing a live show on Thursday night. And then flying back to Honolulu on Saturday. So I'll be there for probably 2 or 3 weeks at least for live shows out of the studio in Honolulu. Still having a plan to have a meetup this coming Friday. So I think we're going to some barbecue joint downtown. And I actually saw a flyer for today. Should have brought it up. but we'll come up with a time on that. I'm thinking probably 6:30 or 7, maybe earlier. I don't know. Those of you that are going to meet up in Rochester, let me know what time works the best for you. Then we'll get a kind of a time together to meet. Hey, to remind you of the contest that's going on. If you have a submission for the changeover to from the geeknewscentral.com/live page to come up with a design for live.geeknewscentral.com, you've got about another week or so here to get your designs in, and the winner of that will win a $250 coupon, or not $250 in cash, not a coupon. And I've gotten a couple of ideas, submissions that have come in over the past couple of days. So if you've got an idea for a website, I'm going to be helping people get some sites started and some business ideas kicked off. So potential of some money there on the table for that as well. Not necessarily as a contest, but as an investment. And of course, if you have not yet tried GoToMeeting, do so, because what we're going to be doing is at least one listener from this show is going to get 3 months worth of credit of their GoToMeeting package paid for by me. So send me how you've been doing with the application, and we'll do that, give that away on the 28th of June, just so that we can get near the end of the month, and then July, August, and September will be free for one lucky listener that is trying GoToMeeting for the very first time. So nothing to lose there. Give a trial out, and let me know what you think about using the app. Closer we get to the 28th, and you have time to get those submissions in. Hey, that ThinkCenter, the Lenovo ThinkCenter A63 that I was talking about giving away, I guess they finally come up with a schedule. So starting next week, I got to look at the schedule and see when I fall in, but there'll be a contest for that. So that's forthcoming, and we'll be giving that away here probably within a 2 week period after the 21st of June. But I'll let you know exactly when that's going to go down. What else is going on here? Let me look at my little list. And oh, one thing I'm looking for now, I'm taking submissions again for writers for Geek News Central. We've got a bevy of writers, but it's summer, and sometimes during the summertime, writers slow down because it's nice to be outside. So if you want to write for geeknewscentral.com, these are paid positions where you get paid to write. And send me an email. Tell me what topic you'd like to write about. And if you have any sample work, send that over. So Geek News Central is looking again for writers for the blog. Geeknews@gmail.com is where you can send that email to, and just basically put in their podcast writer in a subject line so that I know to recognize that that you're interested in that position. Just so you remember too, cafepress.com/OhanaStore for the Ohana Ware, being run by Sam under the Ohana over at in Albuquerque. And of course, he's part of our insider crew. So if you want to become an insider, geeknewscentral.com/insider. And I'll be doing some another insider when I get back to Hawaii. So look forward to putting that program out for those of you that are insiders. Of course, I got offers over at geeknewscentral.com/offers. Got a new sponsor to introduce to the show today. Talked a little bit about them during the last show. And I had to take some time to really learn about the product and kind of go through their process to see how it worked and how cost would compare. The company I'm talking about is Matrix Direct. And we all know that life assurance is one of those things that is an essential part of, really of every family's financial plan. And I know thus far, with my experiences so far with Matrix Direct, especially with their term life insurance offerings, they're pretty affordable, and it may be more affordable than what you have thought. And according to their literature, you can save up to 75% more on their term life insurance. I did some pricing for my age and went through the process, and actually their term life policy plans that they have, if I compared them to plans that I bought 10 years ago, which I obviously would be at a, because I was younger then, which would have been at a the rate when I was 36, those pricings were, you know, better than what I would have ever expected to get being 46. But when I got done with the full quote and going through their questionnaire and working with their agent online, the quote actually was pretty close to what I was paying for the amount of insurance that I was paying when I bought insurance when I was 35, 36. So I was pretty surprised with that. So according to their website and everything that I went through, and it looks like their pricing is really, really aggressive. And they've helped over 4 million people with life insurance needs. And Make Sure Trucks has offers flexible plans, so you really only pay for what you need. And you can get a free quote by going to matrixdirect.com/podcast. That's matrixdirect.com/podcast. I have a link up in the show notes. So there's no sales hype, just straightforward expert advice and affordable rates. Hey, this is something I've always wanted to say during an advertisement. Policies issued by American General Life Insurance Company, Houston, Texas, not available in all states. For details about this paid advertisement, please visit Matrix Trucks online at matrixtrucks.com/podcast. It's that legal disclaimer. I need to find a way to speed that up like 10 times, right? So thanks for Matrix Direct being a new sponsor here at Geek News Central. I hope you guys check them out. Of course, longtime sponsor GoDaddy.com. They really are the company that helps keep the lights on here. And if you're looking for domain names, dedicated servers, virtual dedicated servers, shared hosting accounts, renewals on .coms, promo codes is what you need when you get to the checkout counter to save yourself a lot of money. I just done a big batch. As a matter of fact, I thought I had renewed all of my .coms through the end of the year, and I went and checked, and I still had like 43 .coms that I needed to renew. So what I did is I did a two-year renewal on those .coms, used my promo code COMSALE, and saved myself a big bunch of money just on the discount for the .com pricing, and then I know I'm good for not having to pay the new pricing that goes into effect July 1st. So COMSALE is the code you want to use for renewals on your .coms. Definitely do that before July 1st. Renew for a couple of years and lock in your pricing now because the pricing is going up. But still, everyday great pricing on hosting accounts, dedicated servers, virtual dedicated servers. Promo code GEEK5 will save you 15% on orders $20 or more. Todd will save you 10% on orders that are non-domain related. Todd20 will save you 20% on a one-year shared hosting account. And Aloha will save you $20 on orders $75 or more. So you can find the links there to the GoDaddy promo codes on the main web page at Geek News Central. Tell your friends, family members, and people about the codes. All right, let me go ahead here and bounce right into the tech content. I've got it's kind of a slow news day, and I think what it is because I'm on the East Coast, it's only 8:16 p.m. That's 5 p.m. on the West Coast. The next day's news hasn't started to pop yet where I normally get that next day's news. So, you know, I've been looking at news last night, looking at news today, and it just seems like I'm in such a great advantage when I do the show closer to Hawaii, time zone-wise, because I'm starting to see new stuff for tomorrow that maybe you would not have already caught. But today was a lot of stuff that maybe some of you have already saw, so I was trying to look as far forward as I could on news information. So it is different putting the show together on Eastern Standard Time versus Honolulu Standard Time, which is our HST, which is 6 hours difference. And but so it was fun. Otherwise, it's still daylight here, which is that's weird to me too because it's normally dark by 8 p.m. In Honolulu. Those of you on Ustream, the bandwidth here in the hotel is simply horrendous. So if you are not seeing the show real well, sorry to say that this is the best it's going to get. And I tried doing EVDO, and Verizon failed me. Sprint's pretty good, but the bandwidth is just not really super good here in Rochester. So I apologize if it's pixelated on Ustream. Right, in the tech news, Japanese spacecraft has returned from asteroid sampling mission. The Japanese spacecraft Hayabusa returned from its seven-year trek to the asteroid Itokawa on Sunday, and a capsule that hopefully contains pieces of the asteroid was recovered in an Australian outback this morning. The mission was the first round trip to a planetary body beyond the moon, and if the capsule isn't empty, the fourth space sample return mission ever. So this is exciting stuff here. And some pretty dramatic pictures. I'm thinking to myself, are they sure this thing made it? Because it doesn't look good. In the, it looks like this thing broke up in the pictures that are provided by the Japanese Space Agency. So we will see. They're saying, you know, we'll see if it's in one piece or not. But time will tell here. A little more news on the space side. There was a paper written nearly 30 years ago, and it was entitled the Kessler syndrome, K-E-S-S-L-E-R, and it had to do with space debris. Now, NASA set up the Orbital Debris Program Office to study the program that Mr. Kessler had determined. To be basically, we're going to have a big issue up there where stuff is going to start being like ping pong balls. Are going to, you know, we have satellites crash together, it creates a big debris field, and then, you know, because that debris field is increased from 2 pieces to 2,000 or more, then you have, you know, higher collision rates over time just because you've increased the amount of debris that's out there. And in a scenario that was accepted in theory by NASA, basically noted that there was really nothing that could be done and serious about removing space junk. But at this point, it's, you know, nothing has really progressed on that front. He predicted nearly 30 years ago that this cascading set of events would start in approximately 2009-2010 time frame, and that's exactly what happened. In 2009, we had a big collision of two space satellites, and now not only has NASA stepped up their monitoring, but so has the Department of Defense, and a large number of other organizations are just looking at all the space junk up there. The military unit, I guess, is called the Space Surveillance Network. And they're now tracking 15,000 plus pieces of material out there, bigger than the size of a baseball. And they feel that this is just going to get worse. Now, NASA has said that the Kessler syndrome is in effect, and we're in a runaway environment, and we won't be able to use space in the future if we don't start dealing with this now. I just wonder if we're too late. This is a 3-page article from Wired. Good read, enough to make your eyeballs get a little big. You know, the International Space Station has had a number of incidents happen, one with an object that came within a mile of the space station in recent months. And that's close in space, especially on the orbits they're on. So it's only a matter of time, I guess, before this starts to, you know, multiply and become worse. I just hope they come up with a plan, and they're going to have to do something. What do you guys think? What do you think they're going to have to do up there with all the space junk? Are they going to have to figure a way to spend billions of dollars to get up there and start deorbiting some of this stuff? Or, you know, what's the, you know, you're dealing with such speeds. It's not like this stuff is just floating. You know, it's moving at very, very high speeds. And it's not like you just grab something. So I'm kind of curious what you all think. I'd love to hear your feedback on it, geeknews@gmail.com. Okay, have you got $10 million laying around? I don't. Well, if you do, that is a price for the White House on the real estate website Redfin. If you go on to redfin.com and you put in the address of the White House, you can find that it's for sale for $10 million. So I'm sure that there'll be a few people putting an offer in. Apparently, the folks over at Redfin have a little issue on their website, and this was obviously a false listing because I don't think they're going to put the White House up for sale at any time soon. You know, I guess is the pricing a little high? 10 million, is that a little too high for the White House at this point? I have a little egg on their face. Hey, 1 year since the NTSC has basically analog television has went dead or died, and the analog signal was essentially shut down on June 12th, 2009. And analog television had been around for 68 years at that point. And we know that we're now in the era of the ATSC digital television era. But here's some interesting facts about the transition. A retailer saw this is an opportunity, obviously, sell new HD TVs and 46 million converter boxes. And while the cable providers, the advertised rates as low as $10 per month to switch over, one third of the converter boxes the U.S. subsidized, the U.S. subsidized, were approximately $600 million worth, and most of them were never purchased by consumers. It goes on to say that over 51%. So they say, how many did they have? One third of the converter boxes the United States subsidized, or $600 million worth, were never used by purchasers. Okay, so people just bought the boxes, they didn't get the subsidy. Over 51% of Americans felt the digital television transition was good, while 23% said it was not, and 12% of the respondents report that since the switch, they have worse reception. Others receive better reception, gaining 24-hour movie channels, retro channels, foreign programming, and other new networks that had not existed under the old analog system. So my curiosity is, for those of you that are antennas, that are getting the new HD TV signals, the digital TV signals, how has the transition been for you? I have cable in Hawaii. Really, there's just a couple of stations that are transmitting. So I get cable television. What do you guys see, though, for those of you that are not connecting to cable and just using a standard antenna? How's your experience been compared to analog days? Love to hear you guys' feedback on that. Geeknews@gmail.com. Voicemail hotline is 619-342-7365. Well, NASA has, because of budget cuts, been required to essentially put the man on the moon on a back burner. You know, they had planned on working towards putting a man on the moon once again by 2020. Obviously, that the budget cuts have not allowed that with the really the cancellation of the Constellation program. So there is really, at this point, a bunch of technology, a bunch of money that's been spent that really, at this point, is being flushed down the toilet because of the change in direction by the administration. So people are, not very happy about the change that NASA has had to undertake. And the administration currently has no program and really no logical layout on what to do, what to do next as far as going back to the moon, and it's everything else has been put on the shelves. Now, obviously, the administration wants private rocket developers to start picking up heavy lift capability for the United States, and even do shuttle replacement jobs like heavy lift for supplies and stuff, the International Space Station. So, I guess from my perspective is, where does this leave the NASA folks? I think it leaves the large majority of them without a job, while we could start slipping into, more privatization. And I haven't really gotten much feedback from all of you on what's, happening with the space agency, where you think it's headed. We've gotten some feedback in the past from some of our audience members, but now that we're really on the waning days of the space shuttle, basically two missions left. We're going to be left without, any heavy lift capability for a long time until NASA is able to get their next version of heavy lift in orbit, which will probably be another 8, 9, 10 years from now. So what do you guys think? What do you guys think that are we going to be able to? Is private industry going to be able to cover us to make up the gap? Or do you think that going back to the moon was a colossal waste of money in the interim anyway, and that no, more nor, more near Earth orbit stuff is probably on the burners? I'd love to hear you guys' feedback. So anyway, this is kind of a response to a Times Online magazine, timesonline.co.uk. Essentially, where does the American space program go from here? And I think that has a question that a lot of us are asking as well. Of course, since the announcement of the iPhone version 4, a lot of people have been getting excited about this. If you're planning on pre-ordering an iPhone version 4, tomorrow is the day that orders can start to be placed. Radio Shack is going to be carrying iPhone 4. Best Buy is going to be carrying it. Walmart is going to be carrying it. And you're not going to have to put money down like the Shack. You're going to be able to just put orders in advance. And you're going to be able to go into AT&T stores starting tomorrow as well to pre-order your phone. The folks over at have a article here on how to pre-order the iPhone 4. So if you're going to do it, you want to get it by the 24th, you'll probably want to be online either late tonight when the clock strikes midnight or very early in the morning, order your iPhone 4 before the mad rush starts. Okay, for those of you that are gamers, the new Xbox 360 is official. $299 is shipping today, and people are pretty excited about the new look of the device, but they're calling it the new Xbox 360. That's the actual name of it, so they didn't really change up. The according to Microsoft representative, Xbox 360 original will still be sold while they're stock, but they're not making any more of them. Once they're gone, they're gone, and we assume the new $199 variant of the new design will eventually be released to fill the void. Along with that, today they announced, let's see if I've got it in the link here, it's an add-on to the Xbox Live and ties into Windows Live Messenger. It's called Kinetic, K-I-N-E-C-T. It's basically a video service which serves as a logical extension of the Kinetic brand or Kinetic voice. It has motion sensing. It will allow you to do video conferencing. It'll watch videos and Netflix and be able to do stuff on Facebook while sharing with people that are on that you're chatting with. So it's called Video Kinetic, K-I-N-E-C-T. Again, it's going to be an add-on for the Xbox 360. So, you know, I've read a little bit about this today. And looking at the device that they came up with for this, it's ugly. It really, really is. The device is going to sit on top of your TV. It's got the sensors and the cameras. It's big. It really, they really still don't get it when it comes to design. They really don't. But everyone's pretty excited about this. So it's going to be tied into Bing. You're going to be able to watch sports, movies, music. Again, it's video conferencing along with, the same person can watch the same movie you are. You can chat about it. So they had a pretty good demo on it today. So I'll have that link up in the show notes for you to check out. And any of you that are Xbox 360 gurus, love to hear your feedback on what this means for the Xbox. All right, it's being rumored that when the iPhone version 4 is released, it's going to include Facebook video uploads. And really, this has been missing from the Facebook app for a while, but you're going to be able to very quickly send 400 by 480 by 300 by 30 frames per second video straight to Facebook. And since Facebook is using HTML5, you won't have to worry about any conversions, and you'll be able to see it directly in your HTML5-based browsers. All right, over that security breach on AT&T. AT&T has sent an apology email to customers affected by the iPad 3G security breach. Here's how it read. In part, this was sent out on June 13th. Dear valued AT&T customer, recently there was an issue that affected some of our customers with AT&T's 3G service for the iPad, resulting in the release of their customer's email address. I'm writing to let you know that no other information was exposed and the matter has been resolved. We apologize for incident and any inconvenience may have caused. Rest assured, you can continue to use your AT&T 3G service on your iPad with confidence. Now, there's the hacker group. Let me see if I can find this article. The hacker group is basically saying AT&T is lying. And make sure I've got this article. Let me bring this up. I should have had this stacked in the cache right after this. Of course, that... Now, what's going on here? Where is it? Okay, so on Computer World, the hackers who harvested more than 100,000 Apple iPad 3G owner email addresses blasted AT&T as dishonest today and said the group has an exploit it or others could have used against all iPad owners. The hacking group obtained the email addresses using an automated PHP script that collected the iPad 3G owners' ICC-DAC ID numbers and associated addresses from AT&T servers using a publicly available feature of the carrier's website. AT&T disabled the feature this last week, and basically said that they're not done. This is said it's very easy based on some vulnerabilities that exist right now in Safari, which Apple has plugged on the desktop versions of Safari, but they have not yet patched the iPad versions. And they're basically saying that AT&T is still... Any customer, any AT&T customer is still open for hacking. Now, let's see if I can quote what they say. I'll tell you this. The finder of the AT&T email leak spent just a single hour of labor, not counting the time the script ran, with no human intervention to scrape the 114,000 emails. If you see this as a great effort, so be it. But at any given moment, whatever effort us researchers are making are dwarfed by those in the thrall of evil. So get real. So that kind of didn't make sense at the end. But the FBI was on. But these guys say because of a hole in Safari, this is all iPad users are still at risk from this. So, if they just get my email, I guess it won't be so bad. But we'll see how long it takes Apple to actually patch the bug in Safari that's on the iPad. Now, speaking of the iPad, there's a good article over on the Apple blog at theappleblog.com talking about 5 iPad apps that changed my mind. And I haven't checked a couple of these out, but Air Video, $2.99, Air Display, $9.99, Documents to Go Premium, $11.99, Sketchbook Pro, $7.99, and Comic Zeal Comic Reader, an app for $7.99, was really what kind of set this guy's thoughts toward the iPad being the end-all. Now, I downloaded an app that I was pretty impressed with. It was HowToCast. Their app, basically it has a link to all the how-to videos that howtocast.com has up. And I thought that one was pretty slick, the way the interface worked. But for the iPad, for example, Air Video, this guy says, when I found this app for my iPhone and iPod Touch, it was like a godsend. But when I booted it up for the first time on my iPad, it was more impressive by far. The added screen real estate and resolution makes the iPad a terrific portable video device, and having access to my entire media collection on my home computer for work, well, that's just a fantastic combination. So he says, so fantastic, in fact, that I still feel like I'm getting away with something when I use it, that Apple at some point come in and shut it down for being too competitive with iTunes. Let's hope that doesn't happen, because Air Video's developers say that an update will also support audio streaming of your iTunes library. Only thing that's missing is support for Apple's video out accessory, but that's recently come to Goodreader, so we could be in luck shortly. So really what Air Video does, it links back to your media, wherever you're at, you can get access to your media inventory from your home network, and watch that content via that application if you have the bandwidth to support it. So that's pretty cool. And then it goes on and talks about these other articles. So I have that link up in the show notes. What is the iPad app that you absolutely couldn't live without? Geeknews@gmail.com, voicemail hotline, of course, is 619-342-7365. For those of you that are up on Ustream, I'm not watching the chat, so I'll try to catch that at the end. Again, I know a number of you have just come in, and we're streaming from the hotel on the hotel network. And if the video is pixelated, I apologize. Now, talking about platform wars as far as mobile devices go, The iPhone has started to see a decline in market share specifically because of Android. With Apple's iPhone and iPod Touch, which are the most current, were the, while maybe the current most popular mobile browsing devices, handset using Google Android's operating system are very quickly eroding Apple's lead. Over the past year, Android browser share on mobile devices increased 12.2% and now is used by 1 in 5 mobile web users in North America. This is according to Quantcast, a San Francisco-based web analytics firm. Apple's drop is the steepest, down 8.1% in the last 12 months, but Android's gains can really only take out a bite of Apple as everyone else is essentially sitting on the sidelines. Now, it's really kind of funny here because if you look at web consumption market share, as of May of 2010, Apple's sitting at about 59-60%, whereas Android is now has climbed since January of 2009 to less than 5%, are just peaking above 20%. So you can tell that Google Android has really made a mark. Now, if you look at RIM, of course, that's the operating system that runs BlackBerry. Very minimal, just pretty flat growth. And then all the other phones combined make up less than 10% of the total web-based usage of mobile devices. So I think we're seeing that same thing in our stats on our side as far as media consumption goes. A lot of consumption on the upswing on Android. Of course, BlackBerry consumption is of media. Podcast media has been really high for a while anyway, but we're starting to see a definite impact by the iPhone, iTouch, and iPad as far as media consumption goes as well. So kind of cool to see what's happening in that market space and see how it will parallel over time. Hey, Scoble's got a write-up here that I'm kind of skeptical about, and I really kind of question here where he really pulled this information. And basically, he's saying that vacation and trip planning has changed in the age of Facebook. He tells people to first look at TripAdvisor and Trip Friends features. He says he's taken a real family vacation in 2 weeks, and he's been using tools on Facebook to determine his vacation plans. He said he visited tons of sites like Next Stop or TripAdvisor, and he posted some questions on Google Buzz for advice from a much larger group of people, and folks have been sending him info via Facebook, some, you know, basically some recommendations that way, specifically TripAdvisor. Now, I'm not familiar at all with this site. Now, it's an actual website drop too, tripadvisor.com. He says, if I look at the page for visiting Laguna Beach, California on TripAdvisor, for instance, I learned that 101 of my 1,700 Facebook friends has been to Laguna Beach. I bet if I ask them what we should do, that we'll get some good answers. But compared to his Gowalla page on Laguna Beach, the page showed that shows me where people are actually checking in, that he really couldn't get a sense how many people had visited there. So he's got some points on where do we need to go for travel planning and using social media, and he's got some points here. But you know, how are you guys planning your trips? Are you using Facebook? You know, what are you using as sites? I go to a lot of traditional sources, I guess. So what do you guys think? Love to hear your feedback on this, but I have this article, of course, up in in the show notes for you. Dave Weiner's got an article about people reading blog posts. He says people don't read what I'm doing. What? People don't read what I'm doing about it. What does that mean? People basically, I read the article, but his title is a little out of kilter there. But anyway, he basically says people are complaining that they have to open his, when they go to scripting.com, all the articles are not there, just a little headline, and you got to click a button to open up everything else so you can see the article. Or if you want to go to an older article, you got to click on something. And I know that people skim when they read. I see this in the comments on the blog at Geek News Central. Sometimes we'll have said something in an article and people will make a statement that says, I'm like, did they read the blog post or not? And so he's saying, if I spend an hour writing something, is it really that big of a deal for people to click something to expand the article? You know, in all honesty, it is kind of a hassle to read his website, and I've always thought that putting everything in within the article without having to make it any more difficult is part of the success that I've had at GNC. But and I know many of us skim and read stuff. I read stuff in my newsreader still more than anything else, and going to websites. I very rarely go directly to a website to read the actual articles. But so. Are you a skimmer? I think I skim, except when I really want to. If I find something that's really compelling, I'll read the whole thing. But if it's not that substantive, I skim articles. I do, you know, I do in preparation for this show. I do. If I read every last article, I would never be able. I'd be 6, 7, 8 hours trying to. Now I read the articles and get the background information what I'm going to cover during the show. But I'm looking at 400 or 500 news sources to find the information that I'm going to just put up here for all of you. And if I read every one of those articles, I would never make it. So I know I skim. Now over on YouTube, the YouTube news feed, there's something happening over here at YouTube. You know, have you ever heard about this thing called CitizenTube? CitizenTube.com? The folks at YouTube are working with graduate students at the University of California, actually working with students at the Graduate School of Journalism to track news as it breaks on YouTube, and they're going to be providing a feed that will provide a stream of breaking news on YouTube with a focus on strong visuals, non-traditional sources, and the very latest uploads. For example, a video like a natural gas explosion in North Texas where the actual citizen journalist actually caught the video, uploaded it to YouTube, and then they put it over. But I went over to CitizenTube.com and was a little bit surprised what they're doing over there. So check it out. It's just getting started. Let me know what you think about it. And do you think this is the way we're going to start getting our news now as news industry starts to continue, well, as it continues to shrink? How many go to Starbucks every day to get your coffee fix? Well, starting July 1st, Starbucks will finally begin offer free and unrestricted internet access over Wi-Fi in its stores. But what they have done is they've partnered up with some content organizations where you're going to be able to get news that would normally be probably behind a paywall. Example, you're going to get access to data from the Wall Street Journal. You're going to get access to information from Apple and its partners at iTunes, the New York Times, USA Today, Yahoo, Zagat, a number of different other partnerships with content providers to give you access to what normally was behind a paywall. So I find this kind of interesting. Will this drive you going to Starbucks more to get your coffee or go there and suck up their bandwidth? It doesn't talk about actually having to have had to buy something. It talks about free and unrestricted internet access over Wi-Fi in its stores. So apparently this content partnership that they're doing is what's going to pay for it. But starting July 1st, free unrestricted Wi-Fi by Starbucks. Hey, a company today called C-Micro has really shaken up the server industry. And this is super techie. It's really cool what they've done. This is a company that's really was not on anyone's radar. And they've done some pretty innovative, they've announced at least something very innovative. They announced today that it's created a server with 512 Intel Atom chips that get supercomputer performance but uses 75% less power and space than current servers. Let me say that again. They've created a server with 512 inexpensive Intel Atom chips where they're getting supercomputer performance but uses 75% less power and space than current servers. Now, if they're able to deliver on this, let me go down and read you some power savings that they're going to be able to provide to folks that have big clusters of servers. It says if you ran a bunch of servers at 100% capacity for 4 years, in order to hit a computing task target known as, it's called SPECINT 100,000, you would spend $1.5 million using Dell servers. Using SeaMicro, you would spend about $428,000. That's $1 million in savings alone just for the servers. Now, check this out for power savings. If you're running the SeaMicro server at 100% CPU utilization, as compared to a Dell R610 supercomputer, the 4-year cost for Dell R610 is $1,513,000 just for the electricity bill. I'll make sure I'm reading this right so I don't mess this up. 72 kilowatts. No. Let me back up. The power for the Dell would be $378,000 a year. The power for the SeaMicro would be $107,220. If you're running at 25% utilization, the Dell, wow, it actually costs more. How come it costs more to run a Dell at 25% CPU utilization? That's weird. Have they got that chart right? How can it cost less? When a CPU is running at 100%, it's going to be using more power. But they're showing 25%. They must have this backwards on this chart. They're saying at 25% CPU utilization, the Dell R610 would cost $819,000 a year to run. The SeaMicro, power-wise, would cost $139,380. So basically a delta between 25% and 100%, actually the way they have it laid out, the delta from 100% CPU utilization to 25% utilization is a savings between $1.08 million and $2.71 million. So if this company is able to really deliver on what they say, the folks at Dell, Intel, and everyone else probably are going to be shaking in their boots. A little confused about this this one chart because it looks like they've got the 100% 25% flipped in their calculations here, but it's basically run on very inexpensive Atom Intel chips. But this has made big news all over the server industry today, and I found this over at VentureBeat.com. And if you guys check it out, just go look at the chart at the bottom of the article, and maybe you guys can figure out why the 25% CPU utilization costs more in power than the 100% did. Okay, moving on here. You guys, we talked a little bit about this in the last show about the Army guy that had been apparently, or actually has been accused of uploading classified material to a wiki site, and a hacker that has been pretty well known, actually has gotten a little bit of trouble in the past, was the one that turned this individual in. And this guy's been getting death threats and all kinds of things from the hacker community. It's really kind of sad what has happened here, but I found this very interesting in what he said. Let me see if I can find the actual his actual quote here. Oh boy, come on! It's because it's really good. He said, "I couldn't just do nothing, knowing lives were in danger." Lammel said, "It's classified information, and when you play Russian roulette, how do you know there's not a bullet in the next chamber?" He says, "I'm not a traitor," he added, "and I wouldn't harbor a traitor." So what I find interesting about this is that here you have a guy that has been convicted in the past of breaking into a computer network. He is paying a pretty significant fine, $600,000, I think, was his court judgment for his hacking that he did a number of years ago. But yet, this guy had the good common sense to say, hey, this individual is doing bad things, and there's a traitor among us. And I be honest with you, what he did in the past wasn't right, but I applaud him for doing the right thing and turning this guy in. So I don't know what you guys think about this whole deal, but this guy is under a lot of pressure. He finally, as the article says, he is suddenly found himself in infamous in some quarters, but he's been meeting with DOD and the FBI, and this guy that supposedly has been accused of releasing information that he shouldn't have has been arrested. So good on him. I'm glad he turned the guy in, as well he should have. And maybe the judge will be a little bit lenient on his having to. Oh, he only has to pay back $64,000 in damages, but maybe the judge will relook at this guy's case, and maybe he'll get a little bit of a, you know, some positive points back to his rehabilitation. Gosh, I can't talk tonight to save my life. All right, the judge that was going to sentence Terry Childs, Terry Childs is a former city network administrator who was convicted in March of tampering with a key city network, has put off his sentencing until July 2nd at the request of defense attorneys who wanted more time to prepare motions and sentencing arguments. So this guy's facing up to 5 years in prison, so they're going to do some more arguments on his behalf, I guess. You guys been noticing how Twitter's been down? Boy, Twitter's up, down, down, up, up, down, down, up. I don't know what the problem is. They've announced, basically announced it through their Twitter blog that they've been having some issues, but they really haven't been able to say why. But it is pretty annoying. It seems like every time I try to get on Twitter, they've been offline. Maybe you guys haven't noticed it. I definitely have on my side. All right, last couple of articles here tonight. National Geographic is running an article about some research that has been done where now they are thinking that the moon has 100 times more water than originally thought of. They've done studies through rock samples that were actually brought back during the Apollo mission, and they found a lot more water in those samples than what they expected to find. So they're saying that they feel that there's enough water on the moon. Of course, how you extract all that is a different story, but enough water on the moon to, if all extracted, would have about 1 meter of water on the surface. And that bodes well for future science and stuff that we're going to be doing on the moon because, quite frankly, water is a catalyst for a lot of stuff we would need to do, and it's not cheap to haul water into space, that's for sure. Kind of a weird article over on Scientific American, and I guess I want you guys to try this. Okay? The title of this is Brain Holds Hand at Arm's Length from Reality. So here's what I want you to do. Scientists had volunteers place one hand palm down under a board. Okay, so you can't see your hand. They want you to put your hand palm down under a board and put your hand up against the board. Then, what they want you to do is to have you mark on the board where your knuckles were and where your fingertips lay. So, in other words, you have a pretty good representation of your hand. You put it underneath there, then they want you to mark on top exactly where your knuckles are and the outlay of your, basically where your fingers are at. The results have been pretty shocking thus far. Participants thought their hands were about two-thirds wider and one-third shorter than they really were. And their finger length estimates got worse as they moved away from their thumbs. And so it goes to show, when people say, I know this as good as the back of my hand, well, I don't think we all know the back of our hands that well. So pretty interesting experiment you could try at home. All right, Windows XP Service Pack 2 users, you're facing end of life for Internet Explorer patches. Bearing any unforeseen patch in the next 4 weeks. Users running Windows XP Service 2 have seen their last security update for IE. So if you're running Windows XP with Service Pack 2, you will no longer be getting any security updates for Internet. Okay? So you've known since 2004 that they're going to be retiring the operating system on July 13th. And you'll be no longer getting any other IE security updates after this point. Now, you can probably run an alternative browser and still get security updates for that browser. But if anything's tied back to IE, you won't. Now, if you install Service Pack 3, which you should do anyway, you're going to get some extended support, which will run through April of 2014. But there is no differentiation of XP Service Pack 2 customers running IE. There's going to be no more IE updates. This is kind of curious. So just an update on that, all right? Link is over at computerworld.com. All right, I do have a couple of voicemails and some emails to get into tonight. And I think the two voicemails are from the same person. I don't know if he called once and then recalled back or not. But if you have comments on today's show, geeknews@gmail.com. Voicemail hotline is 619-342-7365. And here comes the first voicemail.
Hey, Todd. This is Joshua from Arkansas. I was just calling to try to see. I had heard that Google was working on a new operating system, and I was wondering if that was going to take over Windows eventually or what's going on. I haven't heard any news about it. So if you would, just include some of that in your show next week. Thanks. Bye.
Hey, Joshua. Thanks for calling. I think it's your first time calling the show. What they're doing is Google is going down two paths. They are still operating on their Google operating system, which at some point will make it into PCs. And they're also working on the Android platform. So it's kind of a dual effort. I kind of talked about this in detail on a previous show, but Google is continuing to work on an operating system for PCs, and they at the same time are working on an Android-based operating system, probably for devices like Google TV and, of course, the Android phones. So I think, as some analysts have thought, that they're probably hedging their bets and seeing what they're going to, what's going to pan off in the long run. So your guess is good on mine on what ultimately is going to get deployed. Definitely my team is focusing on the Google TV aspect of things and being able to be ready to bring our channels up on Google TV when that device is made available by Sony and the other partners that they have. So thanks. I think you've got another call in here. I'll go ahead and play that and respond to those comments as well.
Hey, it's Joshua in Arkansas, Todd. I was calling. I seen that you have been mentioning Google Chrome here lately a lot of times, and I was wondering, not a lot of people have heard of Opera, and I was just wondering what your dig on Opera browser is. Give me some feedback on it. Thanks.
Hey, so far as Opera goes, I don't use it. I really don't. I know that it's the browser choice for a lot of Mac users, but personally, I don't use it. And I know Safari, of course, is big. But Chrome, for me, is becoming to be a replacement for Firefox. It hasn't completely replaced Firefox, but definitely has for the show. I like using the browser. It's got a significant number of plugins now as well. But it's definitely is not very much of a memory pig. Now, maybe someone out there that is part of the Ohana, that is an Opera fan or guru, would be willing to drop an email to geeknews@gmail.com or call the voicemail hotline at 619-342-7365 and leave their comments on Opera. Maybe we can get some more feedback from the audience. All right, let me go ahead and get the emails loaded here for that have been emailed since the last show. And let me look at the, gotta get the dates right here so I know where to go back in the in the show notes. And I think, did Trucker Tom, did you send me another email here? I got an email from Nancy. She says, Todd, I think you're forgetting that even if you're eligible for a phone upgrade, when you do, that it becomes a new contract subject to the limits. By the way, I think all my emails to Geek News for my Gmail account must be landing in your Gmail spam folder. This is different from a different account. My last one about malware on the Mac got through. Nancy, thanks for your email. This one came from your the domain that starts with an INT, so it got through. Nancy, I thought that my understanding is, and I'm going to have to go back and read this, but if you get an i4, you are still grandfathered underneath the unlimited bandwidth. Maybe I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure if you are on an unlimited plan, even if you upgrade, you still are grandfathered. It's only for brand new customers. That's my understanding. If someone in the Hana can, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure I'm right on this. Got an email here, but thank you for your email. We'll get to the bottom of this, no matter what. Got an email from Kai Box. He says, I was lazy to write you an email before, but hey, it's never too late. You're doing a great job. Thank you for great tech info. I have a question. How many people from Bosnia is listening to your show? It's 2 million people in the country, and 2-3% speaking English, and 5% of them geeks. Am I the only one? Well, I had not loaded this up, but let's see if I can load this up here real quick. I should have had this already prepared. And see if I can make that happen before the, see if I can get the actual to that stats page before the end of the show. I'm waiting for Trucker Tom's email to load. I think he's actually got an audio comment here. Let's see if I should have pulled this up earlier and had this ready, but I can get to it pretty quick, and I can do a search here for Bosnia and see what the total is. You know, folks, the show has been a little bit shorter since I've been on the road this time around, and I thank everyone for kind of putting up with the shorter shows. It's been actually pretty nice to have a, you know, have them just be a little bit shorter. Oh, everything is like dying on me right now. Come on, baby, you can load up. This URL is not valid and cannot be loaded. I know that's a valid address, so jeez, we may not get to the stats loaded today before the end of the show. And Trucker Tom's email didn't load either. The bandwidth here has not been good. It really has not. And it's been very, very disappointing, to be honest with you. I thought it was going to be good when I first did some initial tests, but I must have been lucky in that the I just, you know, was watching at a specific time. All right, looks like I'm going to be able to get to that data. Let me look at overall. And let's see if I can actually bring this up and actually see how many people from Bosnia watch the show. So have you guys been, what have you guys been thinking about the latest shows with the Portable Studio? How's the sound been? Have you guys been pleased with the content? Really, I'm kind of curious to get some feedback from all of you. Oh, here's Trucker Tom's comment. Let's see here. Can I play this? Make sure this wasn't from the last episode. No, this should be a good comment. Let me see if I can play this from Trucker Tom while we're waiting here. And save as. Is it going to try to download the stupid thing again? Let me go into 614. So this is what I get for not doing all my my homework here, folks, before the show starts. And let me go ahead and load this up in the browser here. Oh, come on, baby. There we go. Trucker Tom's comment. And let me scroll down and actually get to that. Maybe it wasn't actually uploaded completely yet or downloaded. Yeah, it's downloading message again. All right, so let's see if I can get to the stats. There's the stats. Let me bring up the country data. Top platforms, top clients, top countries. Bring up a full list for Bosnia. Maybe I can just do this as a little exercise for everyone to kind of give them a feel for the depth of the show. United States is number one. United Kingdom is number two. China, believe it's not, number three. Canada is number four. Australia is number five with 47,000 listeners coming out of Australia alone. Let me go ahead and scroll down here and see if we can, if I can find this. Bosnia. Let's look towards the bottom. And no, it's not there. It's not all the way to the bottom. There we go. 36. It's not too bad. It says 36 people from Bosnia listened to the show. The lowest number, we have Cook Islands 1, Gambia 1, Seychelles 1, Mali 1, Kyrgyzstan 1, Cape Verde 2, Haiti 2, Uzbekistan 2, Rwanda 3, Mongolia 4, Namibia 4, Sudan 6. So some pretty low numbers on some of the countries. Let's see where it goes and where it actually breaks 100. Sri Lanka broke 100. Morocco broke 100. Let's go and see where it breaks 500. For the show, Chile, Venezuela, Hungary, Bermuda, and then we go well over 1,000 for UAE, Argentina, Czech Republic, Greece, Thailand, Taiwan, Saudi Arabia, Austria, South Africa, Philippines, Switzerland, Poland, Mexico, Italy, Belgium, Portugal, Denmark, India, Korea is at 13,000, Israel, Finland, Singapore, Norway at 18,000, Ireland, New Zealand, Brazil, Spain, Sweden, Netherlands, Germany, Russian Federation, France, Japan, Australia, Canada, China, United Kingdom, and the United States. That's not the full list, obviously. I skipped around there. So pretty good numbers out of Bosnia. So I guess that's pretty good. Pretty happy about that. And let's see if Trucker Tom's stuff actually downloaded here. And we'll play his audio comment, and then we'll get everybody out of here. Add file. And do we have, did that finish downloading? Yes, it did. Here's Trucker Tom's comments on the EVA 4G.
Hey Todd, Tom Wiles here, aka Trucker Tom. I got my Sprint HTC EVO cell phone got activated. I have to say, this is one spectacular phone. This is easily the coolest gadget that I've ever had, and that's saying something because I'm Mr. Gadget. I've had tons of stereo equipment over the years, computer equipment over the years. This is neat stuff. The GPS works flawlessly. The phone itself, the phone function works great. The Bluetooth worked great. It's an amazing device. Now, it is larger than the standard phone. To get an idea of the size, it's about the same size as any 4.25-inch widescreen GPS. It's about that size, maybe a little thinner, because it is a very thin phone. But it's absolutely amazing. And it still fits in your pocket. It's not huge. It's not like trying to cram an iPad in your shirt pocket. But it is larger than some of the other smartphones. Spectacular device. Very, very happy with my purchase. In any case, keep up the great work. We'll catch you later.
Hey, Tom, thanks for that report on the phone. And I'm just hearing nothing but good things about this with this device. So how many places are you finding 4G at, though? That's the question. That's got my curiosity piqued. There's definitely no 4G here in Rochester. I tried already. So I'm sure if you're driving through Texas and stuff, you'll have great luck. They seem to have great penetration there with their partnership with Clear. But let me know how often you see that 4G signal come alive and what kind of performance you're getting out of it. All right, folks, that's it. That's all I got for our show tonight. And thanks for hanging out with me. And those of you on Ustream, I'll hang out here for a little bit with you. But I'll be back same time, same channel, 8 p.m. Eastern for the next show. I'll be coming up live, bandwidth willing. But thanks for hanging out with me and being part of the Ohana tonight. Again, geeknews@gmail.com is the email address. Voicemail hotline is 619-342-7365. Everyone take care. Have a great one. We'll see you on Thursday. Aloha.